From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of November 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. We'll take a look at the ag energies with Steve Platt. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day and hear about Dean Foods' Chapter 11 reorganization with Emeritus Dairy Specialist from the OVI, Mike Hutchins. And we'll do all of that on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday. December corn 4.5 higher today at $3.77¾. The March 386.5 up 4.5. Of the May at 392¾ up 4 cents. July 398¾, 3¾ higher. And December futures $4 even up 1¾. November beans 905¾, 3/4 higher. January at 917 unchanged. The March at 930¼ down 1/4. May at 942¾ unchanged. And July up 1/4 at 953¾. Next year's November at 957¼, 1/4 cent higher. The bean oil down 39 cents. The bean meal up $1.70. Soft red winter wheat for the July 10.5 higher at $5.30¼. The hard red up 15 at $4.58. Live cattle futures down 12.5 in the nearby. February were a dime higher. They finished at 125.57½, and the feeders in the November were 22.5 cents higher at 147.80. Lean hogs up $1.42½ at $64.72½. Crude oil is 6 cents lower for the day. Ethanol down 1¢. Heating oil is down 1¢. That's diesel fuel. Gasoline just about unchanged, and natural gas 1¢ lower for the day. The Dow around 44 points lower. U.S. dollar up 0.112, and the gold futures down $2.60. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Hey, Wayne, good afternoon to you. I hope you're staying warm there in your part of the world.
Well, if you stay inside, it's nice, and it was nice and sunny out at lunchtime. We went and picked up lunch, so a lot better than it was first thing this morning, though. Boy, it was chilly.
A little turnaround Tuesday today in both the wheat and the corn market. What can you tell me?
Well, I think that yesterday we had a full moon. Of course, that messes with things. We had a holiday, and we had a sort of disappointing reaction to the government report, and then also the comments about that things weren't going well with the Chinese. All was heavy on the market yesterday, and basically we got down to what was considered, you know, pretty much support in the corn. A lot of the people feel that D's corn has value around that 370 mark. So basically we saw a little bit of recovery from the hard sell-off we saw yesterday that wasn't necessarily due for things. Those weather, sure, you know, this freezing temperatures and, you know, putting a hold on harvest for a while sure didn't hurt anything for today either as far as the markets are concerned.
So we'll get warmer temperatures later in the week. That'll take the snow off the corn and the soybeans that are left. They'll need to get that off before they run in soybeans for sure. What are farmers telling you about their potential ability to harvest?
Well, like I say, everybody figures it's going to be at least tomorrow afternoon before they get back in the field here. They needed the frozen, the ice off the ears and the corn to be able to run on that because the combine would fill up with ice and snow. But they'll get back in and get going on things then. I think that we'll see harvest start progress a little bit. There's some areas which actually needed to freeze up to get on some of the soft ground. So that way, corn harvest is expected to be about 68% done is what the guesstimates are for the report this afternoon, and beans at 87%. So, but we're hearing a lot of people really sort of complain about they're slowed down because of the moisture content that's still in the corn they got left to harvest, and the elevators closing at noon and maybe two-hour lines in a lot of them. And themselves, they're dryers, so they're getting about a third instead of what they usually would with this high moisture.
Yeah, so they're having to take time to dry the corn, and that just means everybody has to slow way down. So this last bit, and last bit means what, 32% for corn, if the estimate is right, it's going to take a while to get in. So we could have a long haul through, I don't know, December.
We're going to see some of the guys are going to be pushing that December 10th deadline for crop insurance. And we just want to remind everybody, if you are going to go past that December 10th, talk to your agent. Make sure that an adjuster gets out there to appraise, look at, or know what's going on.
Yeah, so the crop insurance does have a closing date on it, and that is December 10th, as you mentioned. So producers, if they have corn that's going to be standing after that, need to talk to crop insurance. I don't think there's a fee for extending it, but I don't know that that's the fact.
No.
They do need to know.
There isn't. It's just if you don't ask for an extension and look at it, then they frown on it greatly as far as getting a claim processed.
That's right. So, and if you have a claim,
ask for that free extension.
That's right. So call your insurance agent and make sure you get that done. Anything else in the marketplace that we need to take up for the day?
Well, South Korea bought some South American corn, and that's one of our regular customers. That's one thing that wasn't good. But the African swine fever, we saw another outbreak in parts of China where they thought it was going to be free of that. And that, of course, maybe gave a little inspiration to the hog rally today.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the late harvest, the cold weather, and the snowfall has put corn farmers across the nation under a big crunch. They're not able to actually bring the corn in, and when it is coming in, it's wetter than it should be, because in large part it was planted so late and hasn't had time to dry in the field, and now won't dry in the field. The nation is not short of propane supplies. However, they're not in the right place, and the pipelines that generally move propane are too small for the supply that's being asked for or demand on the other end. That means truckers will have to move it into place. And that's been a problem that needs to be resolved in part by governors, says Colin Peterson from Minnesota. He's a congressman.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we go through this every once in a while. Everybody has released the hours of service on trucking and all of that. I think people are working as hard as they can to deal with whatever the shortages are. But, you know, the governor has loosened up the hours of service. The federal highway people have loosened it up, you know, so I think we're doing what we can do to try to get this stuff where it needs to be.
And while that may be the case in Minnesota, the Corn Growers Association president there, Les Anderson, says farmers are really feeling the effects of the lack of propane.
Talking to our LP guys, and the trucks are parked today, basically. They're not delivering because they have no gas for dryers. The nation, industry-wide, they said they've used 2.5 times the amount of LP to dry the corn so far this year than they did last year, and there's still a lot of corn to dry yet. They said they have about a 9.5-hour wait at Pine Bend up there to get the gas. Pretty critical situation here, and no end in sight. There's cold temperatures, like I said, you got the heating for the house and the barns and all that stuff going too, so it's just sort of a perfect storm of demand here.
Last Tuesday on this program, the Closing Market Report, when we talked with Harry Cooney from GrowMark, he told us there were plenty of supplies around, but they were out of place, and that trucks could actually make a trip out of state a long way to Kansas and still get propane faster back to some places than using the pipelines and waiting to fill on site in a local area. By the way, Colin Peterson, while from Minnesota, is the chairman of the House Committee on Agriculture. He made his comments during last week's DC Signal to Noise podcast. You can look that up on any of your favorite podcast applications. Jim Wiesmeyer is the host of that program. And during it last week, Wiesmeyer asked Peterson about the financial health of rural America. Peterson was not positive.
It's too early to tell just exactly where we're at, but people are very nervous, and this fall has not helped anything. You know, this harvest is the worst that anybody can ever remember, and so you got relatively low prices, you had weather problems in the spring, you got weather problems in the fall, you had people already, bankruptcies going up to some extent, so it's going to be a tough winter, I think, and again, we don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out.
On that note, the American Bankers Association and Federal Agricultural Mortgage Corporation released a survey of ag lenders on Monday. Among the findings, about 57% of farm borrowers were profitable in 2019, but 82.5% said their profits were declining. Dairy, livestock, and grains were seen as the most concerning sectors. Now, Washington, D.C. is likely to deal in part with some of the problems down on the farm in a continuing resolution that helps to fund federal farm programs. Michael Clements of the NAFB has more.
Congress has few days left to complete the 2020 appropriations process before a continuing resolution expires. R.J. Carney, American Farm Bureau Federation Congressional Relations Director, says the House and Senate are still working on spending levels for agriculture.
The good news right now is both the House and Senate have passed, in both chambers, fiscal year 20 agricultural spending bill. In the House, the total allocation was $24.3 billion in discretionary funding. And in the Senate, it was a total allocation of $23.1 billion in discretionary funding.
Carney says the differences in the bills include relocation funds for USDA agencies and stress assistance for farmers.
In the House, there is a prohibition on USDA's relocation of ERS to Kansas City, while in the Senate, there is no prohibition. Additionally, there's a Farmer Stress Assistance Network, and the House allocates $10 million, while in the Senate there's a $3 million allocation.
A continuing resolution currently funding the government expires November 21. Carney expects lawmakers will need to pass another continuing resolution.
All indications are that there will be another continuing resolution to keep the government open past November 21st. House and Senate leadership are currently discussing how long this next continuing resolution should be. It could be as early as December of 2019. There's also talk of pushing it till February of 2020, and even some rumblings of just doing a full year-long continuing resolution that will go till September 30th of 2020.
Michael Clements, Washington.
And finally, Dean Foods today, one of the nation's largest dairy processors, declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization. Dean Foods says there will be no interruption in its customer service and the availability of products from brands like Dairy Pure, Dean's, and Organic Valley. DFA, the Dairy Farmers of America, is a suitor that may be purchasing most of the company's assets. DFA is a national milk marketing cooperative serving more than 14,500 dairy farmer members across 48 states. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. We're now joined by Extension Emeritus Dairy Specialist from the University of Illinois, Mike Hutchins, to make some sense out of the Dean Foods announcement this morning that it would be entering Chapter 11 reorganization. Thanks for being with us, Mike. Can you tell me about your assessment of the situation as it relates to dairy farmers?
Well, I was a bit surprised to discover that they were going Chapter 11, but I guess if you look at some of the history over the last several months, there has been serious discussions with Dean's and also with DFA, which is one of the largest dairy farmers of America, one of the largest milk co-op here in the U.S. as membership crosses those two sectors. It's concerning here in the Midwest because a number of our shippers ship milk to Dean, and of course, if they would shut down, they would lose their milk market. So that's always a big concern of with milk being as perishable as it is, that you've got to have a market for it just about every day, someplace to go. And Dean's has been very strong in the fluid milk area, and I'm sure many of our listeners realize that that area has been declining. The real superstar has been cheese. We're eating nearly about 45% of our dairy products are in the cheese sector, and now butter has enjoyed a resurgence as well. And so these are not the high-ticket items in the portfolio from Dean's. So therefore, they're getting squeezed in a marketplace in which the American consumers are changing how they are consuming dairy products. And as a result, they're getting squeezed pretty hard on margins as far as that goes, especially as we see now milk prices increasing, which puts even more pressure on some of the milk processors.
What does competition in this area look like?
Well, I think it's pretty tough because we've seen Walmart come in and build a new bottling plant, and they said they're going to supply milk, and I'm sure it's happening to basically Illinois, Indiana, parts of Michigan and Ohio and Kentucky. And so certainly that would be huge competition as far as that goes. Of course, we have our own co-op here, Prairie Farms, which is heavily in the fluid milk area as well. But of course, recently they purchased Swiss Valley, which means now they're in they've got an opportunity to get in the cheese area, which we talked about a bit earlier. So there's big competition there. And, of course, the other big competition is coming from basically non-milk sources. Water, believe it or not, is a huge competitor. Flavored milk or milk beverages, as far as that goes, some of the almond milks and some of the soy milks and that also are very, very competitive as well. And then, of course, you have about 5% of the marketplace coming from organic milk. And I'm not sure if Dean's is in the organic milk, but certainly there are alternatives out there and putting pressure on the consumer who's going to purchase beverages in the marketplace.
So Organic Valley is owned by Dean, and they do have fluid milk that is organic. You mentioned Walmart and a new bottling facility. Is that in Indiana?
Yes, that's over in Fort Wayne as far as that goes. And, of course, that's strategically placed because Michigan has huge amounts of milk. In fact, they have more milk coming out of the state of Michigan from their producers than they have bottling or processing plants. And, of course, if you're going to build a place where you're going to try to find milk, and, of course, that's been the real drive in Idaho as well. That's why there's lots of milk. A lot of milk being produced in Idaho is because they can get it very inexpensively milk source. So the milk coming out of Michigan, because it had to be transported around the Great Lakes to get over here to Minnesota, Wisconsin, South Dakota to be made into cheese and butter, a lot of that milk was under a very great deal of distress. So I think if you're in the milk, if you're going to build a milk marketing plant, you're saying, where are all the people? Where is their excess milk? And bingo, Fort Wayne, Indiana became a logical choice. Plus, they control a huge amount of milk marketing. Walmart sells a lot of milk, and no question about that. Prairie Farms, I know, sells some of our milk here. Illinois goes through, goes into that market as well.
The press release from Dean Foods mentions DFA as a possible suitor. That's a cooperative of about 14,500 dairy producers across the United States. So they would both be owner and client at some point. Do you see any potential problems there?
Well, the problem I see is that right now most of our milk plants don't need milk. They have more milk than what to do with. In fact, some of our listeners are aware that Prairie Farms here in Illinois has got a quota on, which means you can only sell X amount of milk because they only have X space in the marketplace as far as that goes. So certainly, I'm not sure if Dean says we're not going to accept X number of farmers' milk anymore, I'm not sure where that milk might end up going, if any place. In some cases, they force some farmers having to retire. So it's kind of a dicey situation, unlike corn and soybean people who say, well, we can store it, we can hold it, we can put it in the elevator and go in that direction. So the milk is a bit more of a challenge.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
It's my pleasure. Hopefully this will be resolved. Hopefully those farmers will have a marketplace for that and maybe some type of reorganization. And there are several alternatives that I understand that are going to be explored by Dean's.
Mike Hutchins is an emeritus dairy specialist for University of Illinois Extension. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Don Day's here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's cold and clear today, Don. What can you tell me about the rest of the week?
Yeah, this Arctic wave certainly making a lot of waves, a lot of records broken. Not only record low temperatures broken, but we've had snow records in portions of the Great Lakes, the most snowfall for this early in November in some areas. The good news is, if there is such thing as good news with these Arctic waves, is it's a quick mover, and it's one of these outbreaks of cold that doesn't have a lot of staying power. We are going to see the weather pattern moderate later this week and into the weekend, into next week, as we're going to see less from Canada and more from the Pacific. And that's going to allow Pacific modified air to come on in. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean a warm, dry pattern. It's just not going to be as cold. And as we get into the early to middle portions of next week, we do see some weather coming into the Corn Belt Midwest in the form of some rain and some snow as we get into the early to middle parts of next week.
Okay, so overnight, I think I saw 7 degrees here. It's been cold. I think tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, we start to warm up. What kinds of temperatures?
Well, at first, it's going to be a little bit slow to get started, but I certainly see temperatures getting above freezing in many areas by Thursday and Friday, and moderating even a little bit more from the weekend. The southwest wind that's going to develop is going to be able to bring in some much more mild air. So a flash freeze, I think, is a good way to describe this with some moderation coming.
And can you explore just a bit what that next weather system looks like?
Well, I think there is the possibility of some widespread precipitation, as we're going to see a couple of Pacific storm systems move in to places that have been dry lately. That would be Northern California, Washington, and Oregon. And then these systems are going to come through the Rockies and High Plains, and they're going to bring a little bit of a mixture of rain and snow. And I do think north and along of Interstate 80 will be the areas that are going to be most impacted. And I think there will be a fairly widespread event, and it's going to be a little bit of everything, a little rain, snow, and ice.
Now take a look at the Southern Hemisphere for me, where Australian producers have been dealing with drought.
They are, at least here for another week or 10 days. And what's really interesting, sometimes we can tie with what's going on with our weather even into the Southern Hemisphere. And it's not unusual at all to have these cold periods in North America while it's warm and dry in that part of the world, as we watch very carefully what goes on upstream of Australia in the Indian Ocean. Now, I do see a pattern for Australia in a couple of weeks that does look like may bring some cooler, wet weather. In the meantime, they've got another week or 10 days here where it's going to be slim pickings with below average precipitation over most of the country. Not terribly hot, but a little bit warmer than normal.
Anything from South America of note?
Well, a little more stable over in South America. There are some dry areas in Brazil, but at the same time, we're looking at some precipitation over both of the key growing areas of Argentina and Brazil over the next week to 10 days.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. We're now joined by Steve Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois, to discuss the agricultural energy market. Good afternoon to you, Steve. We're a little short on time, so why don't you just drop right into what's been happening with crude oil and ethanol.
In this market, it's been pretty steady. The steadier tone has really prevailed, reflecting an easing in some of the economic concerns and progress with respect to the trade talks. At the end of this week, we'll have the monthly reports by OPEC and IEA. Those will be interesting on whether they will show the more stable economic environment that we're kind of looking toward. I think on the supply side, you're going to be looking at the decline in U.S. rig counts, which have been steadily dropping here recently, and the impact on U.S. production, whether that will be reflected in those numbers as well. We'll have to watch to see if it can impact the overall levels of increase coming from Brazil and Norway in the coming year. I think critical to the outlook will be the OPEC meeting that will be coming up in December. They appear to be looking at trying to get full compliance from some of the members who have been overproducing. And if they can do that, it could help out their prospects in the coming year as well. Currently, I think we're pretty much in a trading range. The market is up against the 200-day average, and we'll have to see if we can break out to the upside here over this 58 area.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, and that wraps up our program for the day. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, you can always visit our website, find everything there, and listen to it again if you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. One of the other places that you probably should visit regularly is the University of Illinois Extension website in conjunction with the Agricultural Economist. That's the Farm Doc Daily website, updated each and every day with a brand new article from the Ag Economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.